Blog Talk Radio.
Two things are true about students in urban American public schools. There are some students who do well and go on in life to become productive citizens, while there is a secondary population of students who go on to live lives that aren't so socially acceptable. While this secondary population of students, some 18% in Nashville-Davidson County, exhibit a number of behavioral issues and face extradition, it's no wonder why those students struggle to succeed academically. If they can't follow the simple rules of order, how are they expected to be focused enough to learn? I'm Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and I have recognized the needs of this population continually being unmet despite the best efforts of many dedicated educators over the years. As a result, my experience as a former special education teacher, youth counselor, and candidate for local and state offices, I've developed a school model to help address this troubled population. Dockery Christian Academy is a private, non-denominational Christian school whose primary focus is engaging parents as partners with educators and teachers in order to develop pro-social character for student learners. I'd love to share more information with you about this innovative education model. So please connect with me at www.dockeryacademy.org. That's D-O-C-K-E-R-Y, academy.org. Connect with us on Facebook at Dockery Christian Academy, or use the hashtag at 2020DCA. Thank you. I look forward to engaging you. Together we can make a difference for all of our children.
You're much more than the struggles that you go through. You're not defined by your pain, so let it go. You're not a victim.
Well, greetings and welcome to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're happy to be back again. Thank you all for tuning in on last week as our very, very special guest who sat in for us, Mr. Ben Shelton and his wife, and I understand Dr. Sparkle Smith was on with them, and a plethora of individuals who called in and shared. Thank you. We're grateful for him, and we probably need to look for him to come up a little bit more, you understand what I'm saying? We probably need to look at him a little again and let's see what we got there from, you understand what I'm saying? But we're grateful that he was able to sit in for us, as well as our regular co-host, Pastor Ricky Waller, who I understand did participate as well. So that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. And we're grateful for all of you, each and every one of you who made the show what it is and what it was, I should say. So we hope that you got something from it. I was able to look at some of the episodes, but we were basically vacationing with my wife, and as I mentioned to you all before we left, we had our 26th wedding anniversary that we were taking time to remember and reflect on, and we're grateful that, again, Lord allowed us to do that. And having said that, what we want to do is to make very sure that we keep all those things in mind and that we don't forget what's important. Family. Family is indeed important. And I wanted to take the time to recognize Mr. Shelton for his role in making, again, Talk Straight yet what it was. Let me begin now. If you're following us also by way of the Blog Talk Radio platform, I just want to apologize now. I seem to be having yet again issues with my Facebook page and posting live. So hopefully we'll be able to get through it tonight, but so far we've been having issues, and I'm not sure what the issue is, but I've been having a number of issues with my Facebook post here, but nonetheless, we carry on, so hopefully we'll be able to return to that sometime in the near future and see how that works. You understand what I'm saying? What can we say? But tonight, we've opened the floor for the next about an hour and 24 minutes or so for your conversation, for your engagement and your interaction. So this is an open mic night. I understand that some listeners who were new to Talk Straight, who tuned in with Mr. Shelton, had some great comments. I was able to listen to a lot of them. And if I recall correctly, the topic basically was how you overcome. How you overcome. Isn't that something? That was a very, very timely topic. And many people right now are struggling with that. So 657-383-0944. Give us a call. Give us a call here on Talk Straight. 657-383-0944. That's 657-383-0944. You listen to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're grateful again for each and every one of you who have been keeping up with us and who participated last week. And as we move forward, give us a call here. The floor is open. The floor is open. We are leaving the floor open to your dialogue, to your input. I certainly want to hear from you. Looking at the events there, we were out on the East Coast there, sadly, when the remnants of Hurricane Ida came and hit New York, New Jersey, and parts of Pennsylvania. And sadly, I saw where a number of lives, I believe I saw up to 10 people, lost their lives or perished. It may be more, but one is too many. But I said that to say that we certainly send our prayers for those people out there on the East Coast there, as well as where Ida began. I had family that was displaced from Hurricane Ida this last week in the New Orleans area. And I understand Mississippi, parts of Mississippi was hit pretty bad along the Gulf Coast there. So we send our prayers out to both places, the Gulf Coast as well as on the East Coast there that were affected. And this is hurricane season, so I guess you can expect anything. I believe I saw where there was some warnings in the right off of the Atlantic Ocean there, near the Caribbean and places like that. So nothing I can do about them, but we pray for the safety and the security of those people who are in the path of nature. And it pays to be up and to have your business fixed. It pays to be up and have your business fixed. So, again, we send our encouragement and prayers out to those who may in the future be affected by that circumstance. 657-383-0944. That is the number to call right now. Again, I want to apologize for my Facebook page being out. I'm not 100% sure of what's going on with it, but I'll keep trying as we go through the show here and get that up and going. But right now, we definitely want you to give us a call here, let us know how you're thinking, how you're feeling on this, September 7th, Tuesday, September 7th, 2021. Do you know that this is the ninth month? And, beloved, that means there are only three more months left. My, my, my. Three more months left, and guess what? We can call 2021 a wrap. We can call it a wrap. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Time is winding up. That's the thing. Time is winding up. And let me tell you something, beloved. We have no time for foolishness. None whatsoever. Because, you know, you'll look up one day and you won't have anything else. The writer in Ecclesiastes says it best. Remember now the Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days draw nigh. They're coming. You know, the time when we won't have the energy, won't have the sustaining power, even the will to push hard and fight hard and work hard like we do when we're young. That time is coming. So we should be cognizant of that and prepare ourselves accordingly, such that we're not caught in a situation where we won't be able to sustain ourselves. Is that right? All right, all right, all right, all right. So I want to encourage you again to go ahead and give me a call here. Give me a call here. It's open mic. It's open mic. I've opened the mic up to you so that you can talk. You understand? That's what we want to happen. That's exactly what we want to happen, is to have you talk to us. This is Talk Straight. And that's what we strive to do here, to talk straight. We don't want to be crooked or sideways. We want to talk straight. And so we open up the floor and offer this platform. Hopefully our co-host, Pastor Wall, will be able to join us here. And our regular callers out of Peoria, out of the Chicago area, out of Jacksonville, Florida, Nashville here. We've had callers from St. Louis as well as Detroit area. So feel free to give us a call. Again, 657 Canada, 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 New York. Give us a call. Holler at us. 657-383-0944. That is the number that you can call in right now and have your voice heard. Share it with us. Share it with us. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. It's open mic, so I did not prepare a specific topic of discussion because it's open mic. And I want you to, again, feel free to, if you have a follow-up question, something that you would like to discuss with us tonight, this is an opportunity to do that. You share with me and let's see where we can take it. I don't have all the answers, but as I promised in the past, we will give our very, very, very best answer that we can come up with. Is that right? So we're happy to entertain, again, your questions, your comments, things of that nature, right here on Talk Straight. And for those of you that may be somewhat new to our format, what we've been doing since, was it August of 2016? So 5 years now, we have been presenting information and holding dialogue specifically on urban American issues that are confronted by children and families, neighborhoods and communities. Along the lines of being able to identify solutions. So we've identified a lot of problems, and in the last few years we strived to present some groups or individuals who offered some sort of solution to those problems. You know, they, by their work and by their engagement, they've been able to offer some things that might be useful or helpful to those who are seeking answers. You know, and unfortunately, we see too much of it. It's not like it's something we can hide or we can deny, you know, particularly for young folk who are caught up in the web of criminality. Oftentimes, they literally don't know what is wrong and how to do things differently, what they can do differently, you see. And so what we've tried to strive to do is to offer some things that you can go back and check. So we had a monologue, offer a monologue when we're not doing open mic like tonight. Offer a monologue for individuals to basically call in and to share their stories. but we provide the monologue so that we have a frame of reference for conversation. And sometimes we get a number of people calling in conversation, it seems like it's all over the place, and we don't want that, right? So we try to keep a framework so if I go off of the topic for the night, we have a basic direction to get us right back there so that our listeners won't be all over the place on the roller coaster with us. You see what I mean? And sometimes our callers come in, they come in between conversations. They may not be fully aware of everything we've been discussing, so we can refer them back yet again to our monologue as a frame of reference. And then we use gospel music sometimes. We use what's considered secular music or rap, or we use blues, we use jazz, rhythm and blues, soul, whatever the case may be. Maybe country music, right? Why do you do that, Doctor? Well, we do that because we understand that music is a universal language. And if you want to honestly represent the sentiment, the zeitgeist, if you will, of the age or period of time in which we're talking about a certain experience, that you can very easily examine the music that reflects the attitude, the tone, and the genre for the day. So we use music to do so. But most importantly, because first and foremost, I am a servant of the Almighty, Yahweh Elohim, the Lord God, the creation. We lean heavily. We began our conversation, our structured conversation, with the word of truth, the text, the Holy Writ. Surely that which guides my faith in practice. Now, somebody else, oftentimes we've heard individuals say they don't accept that. That's not something they follow. I respect that. But as host and as the producer for Talk Straight, you can look forward to it. You can go ahead and look forward to it. I'm going to bring it. Hopefully it'll make sense to you. I'm not here to proselytize or to convert anyone, but I hope if you hear a word that is transformative for you, that you yourself will make whatever moves necessary for you. Amen? I didn't come to preach, but I'm already filling my help right now. I'm already filling my help right now. So this is Talk Straight, and this is Open Mic Night. And again, it's your opportunity to share with me your best ideas. Again, I'm speaking largely to our audience on blogtalkradio.com, who are used to being able to follow us simultaneously on Facebook. I want to reiterate the fact that I'm not sure if I'm doing something wrong, what I'm doing wrong, because I've been doing the same thing for roughly the last 5 years. So I'm not sure what's wrong. But nonetheless, I am attempting to open up our live stream here and let it flow. Okay? And so far, it's not working for us. But tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep the phone lines open. And I do have a little bit of our last week's show from Mr. Ben Shelton. He goes by Ben Ralph Florin Shelton. What I would love to do is to replay a little bit of that for you. And the number is 657-383-0944. Call us here. Call us here. Unfortunately, we're not able to live stream right now, but we do have a pre-recorded portion. And I'd love to share a little bit of that with you. So this is Mr. Shelton. Listen to him. 65, give us a call. Give me a call now. 657-383-0944. That is the number to call. Mr. Ben Shelton, who was our host on last week. This was aired August 31st, 2021.
Things that are needed and that are necessary for our community. We have honest conversations about what can be done, how we can contribute, how we can be constructive, and how we can just overall just make a difference. So with that being said, tonight's episode is titled, How Did You Overcome?
How did you overcome? That's what it said. How did you overcome?
The basis of our conversation tonight is, how did you overcome?
Let's follow that. Very interesting.
So with us overcoming, we have to understand that, first, there are things that we have been through. Everybody on this podcast, or everybody who's live here today on this radio station, has all been through something. How did you overcome? And what we want to discuss tonight is, how did you overcome those issues that you've been through? Does that sound a little familiar? Does that sound a little familiar, everybody?
It does.
The adversity that they have faced in their lives? A lot of times when we're going through, sometimes we recognize it as adversity, but sometimes we don't. But tonight, we want to think about, we want to recall those moments in our lives, you know, when there were certain issues that that isn't a natural part of our process. How do we overcome those issues when the lights was off? Or how do we overcome those issues where we lost a loved one? How do we overcome those issues where, you know, we weren't able to see our way through a dark relationship, you know, having children, things of that nature? So this is what we're discussing tonight is how do we overcome? So just bear with me a little bit as I get this broadcast going live, and then that way you'll be able to call in as well. And when you call in, we want to hear your personal stories. We want to hear exactly what you went through. We want to hear how were you able to overcome those things that you went through. That's what we're discussing tonight. Does that sound fair? Because the point of it is to be able to help people who have issues that are that they're currently facing at this moment. And when they're facing these issues, we want to know what are some of the things that we can do to come out of these issues. What are some of the things that we can do? What are some of the things that we have done in our past? Real life examples of how we overcame things. Because sometimes it may take a story from somebody else to realize, oh, I didn't realize that was an option. That's all it takes. When you're exposed to more, you're able to know more and you're able to do more as a result of it. So when you're ignorant, now you're susceptible to situations. So just bear with me as I get this pulled up, and then that way we can discuss how we overcame today. We're going to take some calls. I'm going to have this number posted here for you guys so you can call into the show. You just call off your cell phone. And then you can give us a story and let us know how you overcame as well. So just bear with me. In the meantime, between time, everybody say hi to each other. What's going on, Robert? Okay. And I thank you guys for tuning in. Because doing so, you're helping us with the show tonight, but you're also helping yourself as a part of the process. Anytime you get on a place where you can have a platform where people can discuss, where people can be able to share ideas and to share situations and the times that they have gone through things, it always gives us the upper hand as a community. Mm-hmm. It always gives us the upper hand as a community.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. It is September 7th, 2021, and this is our live podcast. We are listening to Mr. Ben Shelton, who is our host on last week, and done an excellent job, basically, hosting Talk Straight. And had a pretty good topic there, how you overcome. So that's what we're listening to. Give me a call, 657-383-0944. Let's have a live conversation tonight. It's open mic, so we don't have a structured topic for you, but we're listening to this pre-recorded show, which was pretty good. I had an opportunity to listen to it and gather some very good information there. So I want to encourage you to do so. Our live stream is down, unfortunately, on Facebook, so we hadn't been able to do that, but we're live here on the podcast show. And I got a good friend out of 0946, 804, 0946. Welcome to Talk Straight there, caller. Hello, can you hear me? Caller, can you hear me?
Oh, I said thank you. I had my mute on. It's good to be with you guys tonight.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. This is an open mic format. Last week I was out of town. I was playing hooky, and I was spending time for my 26th wedding anniversary with the wife, and so we had a gentleman that was on with us, actually my nephew. He sat in and did a fabulous job of hosting for us, and he was talking about how you overcome. So tonight we just kind of left the floor open to follow up on that and other conversations we've had. We anticipate having a focused conversation on this coming Thursday, another topic there. But how are you today? How's everything?
Everything is going good. I called last week, and I didn't know you had taken a break. I said, oh, they're not on tonight. So I think I tried Tuesday, but I don't think I tried Thursday. Were you gone the whole week?
I was.
Okay,
in,
okay. So I didn't miss anything good.
Well, they had a great conversation, but I appreciate that. I was in the Poconos Mountains of Pennsylvania. I think not too far from your area in Richmond, right?
Okay.
You're on that East Coast, and, you know, sadly enough, I saw that the Hurricane Ida, some of its remnants came and hit the East Coast with a lot of flooding. In New York.
Yeah, it did.
I was really sad. I heard about the loss of life there. I was like, oh, my goodness, that's rough. That's rough.
Yeah.
But I don't know what we can do about that, but try to prepare ourselves, right, as best we can. Is that right?
Exactly.
There are other storms of
life. So what's the conversation about tonight?
Again, tonight is open microphone, so you are the conversation.
Oh, okay.
It's open microphone allows a listening audience to discuss things of concern to them. Sometimes we go two or three episodes with focused conversation, and everybody doesn't get an opportunity to, you know, share all the thoughts that they wanted to. So that provides that opportunity for us. But it's open mic tonight. It's open mic.
All right.
What's going on in Richmond, in the Richmond area?
Well, everything is, you know, moving right along. School is getting ready to start or has started. I'm not really sure. I saw a lot about it in my feed last week, so I don't know if school is starting this week. I think it might be starting this week because it's after Labor Day or the following week, one of those. But I had a thought. I haven't really been able to kind of make it concise, but I'll just throw it out there. In a lot of my research just around social justice issues, racism, that sort of thing, one of the things that, you know, we keep asking this question, why can't black people come together and make things work? You know, that it seems like we've all been to the university that we can't come together and got a certificate in it. But, you know, I wonder, I said, you know, racism, the history of racism in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought about all the work that black people do. And I said, you know, the conversation of racism and issues around racism is creates a lot of jobs, a lot of platforms. It is an economy of its own. And I thought about, you know, HBCUs, they hire millions of people. And and I thought about, I said, now, is the system set up to really, in this capitalistic system and in keeping the white supremacy, you know, alive, is the system geared toward perpetuation and talk about the problem? And there doesn't seem to be a lot of reward for solutions, but you can speak well, write a book, create some noise, jack up some stuff about racism. I mean, there's money to be made. There are audiences to talk to. There are platforms that are ready for you. And so, you know, I said, well, if racism was solved tomorrow, you know, it's a whole bunch of black people that would be out of work, literally.
Well, that's
would be out of work. So I'm wondering about that.
Well, I concur. There are two things that are true at the same time, and that is in America's history, there's been some serious issues with racism. And undoubtedly, there are individuals who still harbor some of those feelings, whether they're overt with it or covert. And then the other thing that is true is that what I refer to as Negro, Black, Colored, and African American, Afro-American, and I say that because that really, in my view, identifies the problem. See, everybody don't consider themselves to be black. Everybody don't consider themselves to be Negro, African-American, and so on. Depending on where you are, particularly what region of the country, you know, you can engage individuals and they will identify themselves differently. Some people are conscious enough to say that my identity goes beyond just my American experience. And they go to other regions of the world to identify themselves. But I say that to say that that is true as well, that we have people who undoubtedly share a very common experience if you're a direct descendant of somebody who was in slavery in America. But today, friend, there are opportunities for us to focus our attention and our energy and resources on how to improve our personal conditions despite what happened years ago. And that's what I like to try to encourage people to think about. I don't want to give the impression that I'm trying to ignore or erase what has happened, right? That's real. That's a part of who America is, and by extension, those of us who were born here and part of the American system, we are as well. But it doesn't define who we can be and who we want to identify ourselves. Does that make sense?
It, you know, it makes a lot of sense, and what you said kind of helps me to maybe clarify where I'm coming from. And when I say about the economy of racism, I should say responding to racism, whether that be, I don't necessarily mean people that are necessarily playing the race card, but a lot of the ills in society based on trauma that's been imposed on us and social services and all this kind of stuff to deal with the needs of people that, you know, need help in a lot of different areas. And I was thinking about the field that black people, a lot of black people are in, such as social services, teaching, religion, government jobs, city jobs, you know, that sort of thing. And I was just thinking, you know, with the way this economy is going, with the jobs that black people have now, what is the big employer going to be of black people in the next 50 or 60 years? Because a lot of the, unless it's around social services or ills of the community, it's kind of crazy. It's almost like we're trying to deal with racism, but in dealing with racism, you're employed in our reaction to racism. A lot of our livelihoods are built on that reaction, retaliation, fight, whatever you want to call it. But it's all around the issues stemming from racism. You know, whether it's counseling, marriage counseling, drug addiction, you know, mental health, trauma, whatever. I mean, there's a lot. I don't know what to say about that. I don't really have the words for it, but I just thought about it. I said, whether even if we're trying, we're not even necessarily quote-unquote playing the race card, but just dealing with the ills of systemic racism and trying to deal with it in whatever philosophy that we believe in, but it's still structured around some of the effects and trauma of slavery and that's happened to the family and all of that. So a lot of our energy and livelihoods are still pointed in that direction. So I'm thinking, you know, if we didn't have that, what would we as black folks be doing? So I don't know.
Well,
just throw that out there.
So I wanted to lean on you a little bit, if you don't mind, and ask you to clarify. First of all, Pastor Wallace joined us here. Welcome, Pastor, to the conversation. It's open mic night, and my sister out of Virginia is we're engaging in conversation here. And she's asked a very relevant question there. Welcome, Pastor.
All right. Thank you. All right, how y'all doing?
All right, sir. Good.
Hey.
Good.
Hey,
I was going to ask you there, my sister, help me understand when you talk about black people. In what context? What do you mean when you say black people? You were talking
okay.
about
when I say black people, whether it's politics around black issues per se, disparities, that sort of thing. And so there's a lot of economy that's built around whether you're exposing disparities, exposing discrimination, exposing this, exposing that, in trying to deal with solving these issues around systemic racism. But at the same time, in trying to solve the problem, there seems to be more economy built around just professing the problem.
No, I get that. In fact, that's how.
Yeah. I don't know what to think about that. I don't have. It just came across my mind. I thought, there's so much built around it.
Right. Well, because you are aware that there are some people who have been either correctly or incorrectly labeled as being black, they don't see themselves as being black, or they don't see themselves as being the victim in the context of being black. Does that make sense? They don't see that. They can't identify that there's something that's stopping them from living their life and being productive and being happy in the United
States. Excuse me. As a white man whose wife fucks black people, I have to disagree.
Excuse me? Welcome to Talk Straight, first of all. Say that again, please.
I said, as a white man whose wife enjoys fucking BBC.
So what we're going to do is excuse this individual. Talk Straight is an open format, and we air out to a number of people all across the world, essentially. And this young man here, obviously, his mother has to take him back and teach him a few things about manners. So we're going to keep on going with our conversation. So I was asking you that because there are individuals who are too busy living life to be worried about who may want to victimize them or who may want to take something from them, or they don't have the perception that they're in danger because they're busy and they're actually successful at what they seek out to do. That's the reason I ask, because I hear that all the time. I hear the conversation about the black plight and problems, and pass away in here when you get ready. But in reality, what I have found is that when you are occupied with the business at hand for yourself, you have very little time to even consider what somebody else may think about you. Does that make sense, Pastor? Or y'all help me out here. Correct me here. and my sister's here on with me as well.
I don't think all the jobs, I mean, when I say about racism, I don't necessarily even mean those that feel that they're necessarily a victim, but just are, I guess, exposing some obviousness things there. And so, you know, like you've got African American studies. I mean, that's an entire discipline. People get their PhD in that at a lot of colleges. There's an Afro American studies department. You take African American literature.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that's victim, you know what I'm saying? But I'm saying it's in this system, this system seems to carve out, if you want to be about something black, you know what I'm saying, then you can create a platform and generate some conversation around it and create a platform around it or whatever. That seems to be a lot of people's jobs. And I'm not talking about from the sense of victimization, But just using the backdrop of racism, whether it's the Black Lives Matter movement, all the T-shirts, mugs, hats, sayings, platforms, or whatever. I mean, it does generate income for a lot of, you know.
I get what you're saying. I take your point. It is true that every time there is an issue with violence or someone dies, people go out and they have a lot of T-shirts printed up saying rest in peace or things of that nature, right? If someone has engaged law enforcement or some other thing that is considered to be a black or white issue, folk run out and they make money off of putting together paraphernalia and things of that nature. I understand what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying that it is a big time hustle, and I don't mean that in a derogatory term when I say hustle, but I'm just saying that it is an income generator.
All right, hold on one second. I'm following you, and I want to frame the story. I want to frame the story here for our conversation. So I appreciate what you're saying. At the same time, there are individuals like myself, a historian and educator, who believe it's important that we codify that experience, but more importantly, ideas that will enable and empower people to be successful in life and not to have to worry about being knocked down or setbacks and things. There are some people that have done some pretty productive things who, because of their experience, that serves as a teaching tool. I've talked often about Dr. Wallace on, and he's written two books talking about how you can essentially come out of the trap of drug use, drug distribution, and the drug culture. I consider him to be an expert on that. You understand what I'm saying? So there are people who have things, and to your point, yes, that information, those experiences can be monetized. And I agree with you that it looked like more interest is in making money off continuing talking about the problem than there is investing in organizations such as his and mine that offer a solution to the problem that
we
talked about.
Yes, you said it. You framed it perfect. If I could remember how you said that, that's exactly what I'm saying, that there seems to be more support, more money, capital to talk about the problem than invest in a solution. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's when you hear me talk about I'm tired of hearing people talk and like the bumping gum, like we from the land of the bumping gum people. Yeah, absolutely. and it doesn't matter to me who you are. If you're willing to sit down, this young man that just called in earlier, if he had offered some substantive, sensible conversation to our dialogue, I'd be happy to hear from him because it's a possibility that somebody may be able to benefit from it. Unfortunately, he wasn't prepared to bring anything like that. Maybe he's still listening, and maybe he'll rethink his position and say, you know what, they ain't about that on Talk Straight. He's not with that foolishness. They're looking for real answers and solutions. I hope he's listening. And bless his heart. Bless his heart. But he'll learn. You know what I'm saying? If everybody knew everything, we wouldn't need no teacher. That's what I'm here for. That's what y'all preaching. Amen. I didn't come to preach, but I felt my help right there.
Thank you, Pastor. I appreciate you giving me some context for that and some structure around that, because I'll end with this. I've been doing a lot of search around this illiteracy issue that's happening in the African-American community, and the Richmond Public Schools has, based on some money they got from the CARES Act or whatever, they are getting ready. I mean, but they've done this many, 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 many times with different programs, but right now they're getting ready to spend another $65 million on an illiteracy problem, literacy issue, and they'll probably spend another $85 million in the next 2-3 years. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like this constant. We see the problem with literacy. We keep throwing money at it, 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 but nobody's getting any results. And nobody's really making a big deal about that either, that the results are not there. No matter how much money we've thrown at this problem, we're not getting any results.
I got you. Hold tight right there, because I want to bring a point up on that. But let me bring Pastor Wallen in. Let me bring Pastor Wallen.
Okay.
Pastor, you heard our conversation. Let me implore you to weigh in on what we're talking about here. And by the way, it's open mic night. So 657-383-0944. If you would like to bring some sensible conversation, feel free to give us a call, man. Pastor Wallen, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you would allow me to just say, in life, you know, there's a whole lot of do's and don'ts. There's a lot of some will and some won't. And when it comes down to being open-minded, to apply that, and it's understandable. And you're talking about racism, and you're talking about, in other words, racism sounds more like someone is against someone else.
Okay.
And when you have that, and people enjoy being that way, you know, sometimes it's just hard to believe. And when I say hard to believe, that people don't know that they're doing that intentionally. You know? And when it's done in that manner, intentionally, that means nothing and nobody is going to be able to convince them that they shouldn't be that way.
I see.
Now, if you go to the scripture, and that would be fair to do, and he says God is no respecter of person, that should firm it up. That should say, well, okay, well, let me just stop doing what I'm doing then, because I was doing it because I feel like I wanted to be against somebody because of this skin color. You never know. And that's the reason why I said that sometimes, man, it's just people just choose to be that way. And you would think that would be over by now, you know, because it's not like they're not aware of it for the most part. And if it's still going on, if it's still being talked about, you know, it is big business. Because it's a problem. And if you stay in the problem, then the problem would also continue to increase. But if you just tap into the solution, because there is a solution now. It really is. It is a solution. But not everybody is willing to accept the solution, because it would take away from the authority that one may think they have over another.
I see.
So I yield back to you on that note.
All right, so what I'm hearing you, what it sounds like I'm hearing you say is, people have power when they can keep you in the dark about changing your situation and to constantly remind you that you messed up, you down, and therefore you need me to help you realize how down you are, as opposed to telling me how to get up. Am I hearing you right there, Brother Preacher?
Huh?
Am I hearing you correctly? Did you hear what I said?
No, run it again.
I said that what I was hearing you say, and I'm paraphrasing what you said, is that people have power when they continue to rehash any setback or problem that you've had, your past, or the circumstances you may be in, as opposed to telling you how to change them. That gives them power to be able to keep you in a position where you're constantly listening to them tell me about how I fail and I bust my face. I know that. Now help me up if you really care about me.
That's
power. Is that what you're saying, brother?
That's what it is. It's power in it. You know what I mean? It's like I can have the authority over you. And that's saying it's called the advantage. You know, the scripture talked about unless Satan gets the advantage over us, but we are not ignorant of his devices. So there are devices that can keep to have the advantage over one. And that's
all right.
The way it is. If it wasn't like that, I don't think the scripture could have said it no better than that. You know, it's talking about the advantage. That means that if I got the advantage over you, I'm supposed to have it over you. That's the way it is.
And like what my sister was
saying. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Now, what my sister was saying, what I heard her saying, is that there are a lot of people, particularly for the sake of argument, black people, who make money off of keep on blowing up the nature of the problem. But if you ask them, and they're spending money, and money's being given to them to keep talking about and rehashing the problem, but if you ask them, well, what would it take to solve this, they're not honest with you about that. Sometimes I believe they know it, but they don't make no money if we don't have a problem. You see what I mean?
Exactly.
Problems bring big dividends, but you know the solution also brings big dividends. Is which one is going to have the most power over the other? Negativity.
Okay.
You know, you're expecting a lot of money doing negative things. I mean, that's just the way the system is made up.
Right.
Made up that way. A lot of things wouldn't be happening. That's where the students come in at. I said, unless Satan get the advantage over us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. So if he have devices that works, then there are some people that's ignorant toward it. For instance, I'll give you a good example. Drugs used to control me. But they don't control me anymore. Because I got, I became familiar with the device. That was the device to control my mind, to have the advantage over me. And it did for a long time. And I just use that as an example.
I get you.
But it was a true example, man. And it happens. People being taken advantage of, man, a lot. But if drugs wasn't around, they couldn't take advantage of people. Not the drugs.
All right. I was going to respond to my sister here. She was talking about Richmond, and I understand, if I heard her correctly, $600 million is...
$65 million for reading, for literacy. Richmond Public School,
Got it, $65 million. Now, my question would be to them, those people who are going to receive the money and those who are giving the money, What aspect of accountability do you have for that money being used to go toward part of the solution, and that is empowering and educating the parents of the children that you say you want to target? How much of that is going to be spent toward preparing parents to be partners, teachers, and principals in those public schools of Richmond? Have you heard anything about that?
I did read the minutes, and someone did bring up the question, are they willing to refund the money if it doesn't work? That didn't go over. It was just kind of mentioned. some people kind of mentioned what evidence did the program have for its success? You know, that was kind of brought up. But, you know, it initially just went through. Not a lot of not a lot of questions, not a lot of the asking questions about accountability, none of that. It just went on right on through.
You see, Colin, that's what I call throwing money at a problem. Just throwing money at a problem. And a lot
right.
of wasteful kids, we did a show some time back about how Lyndon Johnson set aside money for the Head Start program. Over 50
right.
some years ago. And
right.
the war on poverty over 60 some
yeah.
years ago. We still got
right.
babies who go 12 years, starting in kindergarten, and when they come out of 12 years, many of them, not all of them, but too many of them, can't read and can't write.
Yeah.
After all
yeah.
that money,
well,
after all that time.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
then after they're talking about the war on poverty, we still have families right now who, if it were not for the public that is made available, not that they can't work, but they would have a hard time living. And then people on public assistance have issues that cause them not to use it wisely, and they still are suffering. You understand
right.
what I'm saying? So it's
right.
not just throwing money at the problem. That's not the issue. That's not the issue. And I would ask any group or organization that say they are working toward a solution, where do you have in there some sort of matrix for accountability for the money that's being spent? I don't mind you spending money on education. We need that. People need to learn. But at the end of the day, how do we prove the effectiveness or the efficiency of the money that's been spent? And that's what a You know, that's where we have a problem. And you were talking about who's making money off of it. It's a whole lot of people, blacks and whites and others, who are invested in the system. I think I shared with y'all that annually said that the public education around the country is over $300 billion industry. That's a lot of money.
Wow, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
$65 million just in the Virginia school district is about to be spent on what? You understand what I'm saying? Who's going to get that?
Right.
Who's going to make that money? Do we know?
Well, it doesn't, like you say. Like you're saying, I don't. I'm not a conspiracy theorist and all that kind of stuff. But at some point, it's kind of like, well. Do they want to solve this problem? I mean, it's kind of my friend brought up this. She's a Benita. Think about all the money we've been donating, $19 a month, and them same
right.
little children on television sick and don't have no food for 50 years since I've been watching
right.
TV. Them same little children. It's kind of, y'all could have built a school, a hospital. I mean, but it's the same parent conditions. Everybody's still hungry. Ain't nobody got no food. I mean, and that's just been over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. It's not like, y'all not trying to make these people independent. You're not trying to set them up to be independent. You're just going to keep children of America, we're just going to keep giving them rice and milk and we never see success stories. We just keep seeing the same little hungry babies on television that need that need food. And so I begin, and maybe this is part of the system for the people that want to maintain control, is they're not interested in the solution. Politically, they're going to throw the money. I used to work in the HIV/AIDS community back in the early 2000, and the Congressional Black Caucus came out with this mandate saying that there were a lot of black people that are HIV positive. They weren't being included in clinical trials. They weren't this and that. So there was just tons of money thrown in the black community just around HIV and AIDS. Well, I'm here to tell you, 20 years later, in the LGBTQ community, the rates are sufficiently down. And in the black community, the numbers are just off the chart. And they threw all kind of money, you know. They just threw money and didn't even ask for evaluation, effectiveness, or anything. You know, Pfizer threw a bunch of money. Pharmaceutical companies were just throwing money everywhere. There was so much money on the table, and there was no management over it or nothing. People just made goo gobs of money. But they saw the problem. Okay, we're going to get them off our back, give them some money. And whether it works or not, we don't care, but we've given them the money.
Let me point something out to the point. I don't mean to cut you off, and I see you coming in a second. Let me point something out that you made. Now, I understood you to say that there was a report on LGBT community, correct? And how well they were, and compared that to the African-American community. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah. Right.
Well, now, aren't there African-Americans that make up the LGBT community? So are they two different
things?
Yes,
they separated them. They separated them by race. And unfortunately, in the LGBT community, even among the African-American communities, the numbers are dismal. They really are unfortunate.
Watch this. They counted them twice. If you count them as LGBT and as African-American, you count them twice. So I have to ask myself.
Well, no, the Congressional Black Caucus didn't count them twice. They were making a comparison in the transmission and the HIV, and they did it by race. And in the white community, the trans, because it was predominantly LGBT community in the beginning, among men that were dealing with that, and then they did it by by race.
Let me say this.
As far as the transmission among black people, and the numbers are just terrible.
Well, let me say this: historically, black folk have had a phobia about participating in these trials and experiments, whether it was the government or anybody else. Okay, so even though they may be facing the same issue, they're less likely, by and large, to be open and participatory in the study of issues that face them. We see that now, even with COVID. We see that now, even with COVID. Right. My point is, there are reasons for that. There are historical reasons for that. But my greater point is that whoever this was that presented this data counted the same group twice. And you have to ask yourself, is your data skewed when you do that? Or is there something else behind what you are assessing and what you presenting to people? Is there some other motive? So data can lie, too, depending on who's using and who's presenting. They can fade the lie as well. But let me do this. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Doctor. We got Pastor Wallon with our co-host, my sister out of Richmond, Virginia, and he's been patiently waiting with us there from St. Louis, 4600. Welcome to the discussion. It's really open mic, but we've been, for the past few minutes or so, we've been talking from the topic of individuals who make money, basically, off of issues surrounding race, and not offering any solutions, but only engaged in the profiteering of keeping the problem going and alive, as opposed to, and we were just using an example of $65 million reportedly, has been approved or allocated for the school
yes,
district?
Yes, it's been approved, yes.
Okay. And
for which school district?
Richmond Public Schools.
How many students you got in the district?
That I'm not sure of. I do know that it's about 80% African American.
Well, let me tell
you
something.
Go outside the suburbs, Henrico, Chesterfield, and all that.
Let me tell you something. That's not correct. St. Louis Public Schools is $345 million. They only got about 24,000 students. and that's about $14,000 a student. So I'm sure Richmond, unless you get Richmond's got about a half a dozen students, it's got to be more than $65 million.
No. They got the $65 million came from the the CARES Act for COVID. I think the district got like $120 something million, and they took $65 million of that to gear toward the literacy issue that they're having in the school district.
Well, if they did that, they're going to be in trouble because the money has to go to where it's allocated to, coming from the federal government. Am I right, Reuben?
I'm listening because I was going to weigh in on that.
If it's earmarked for a certain thing, it has to be used that way when it comes from the federal government.
That's what we were talking about, St. Louis. The fact that money is thrown out there and there's little accountability, but yet the same people come back time and time, year and year again, asking for more money for the same problem, the same problem,
right,
the same set.
See, if it's put in the general for education, then that means you're going to be giving teachers raises, and that's not what the money was originally made for.
Now,
apparently, it was there for COVID-related circumstances and not supposed to have been going toward, for instance, Zoom. You know, your kids stay at home and use Zoom. You could use it that way. You could use it toward creating extra space when you got to keep them six feet apart. That means you're going to be able to get less in a classroom. So
right. That's
how it's supposed to be used.
Well,
now, you was talking about something else. Who makes money off of these kids? Black folks make a lot of money off of black kids. Failures.
She said that earlier.
Who's your teachers?
Earlier.
Who's your principals? Who's your school board? And really, it's black parents and stakeholders. It's their fault because they don't hold these people accountable with the powers that they have to hold them accountable. And then if they don't have the powers, like, for instance, on recalling, then they should seek out those powers so they can get rid of them.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Let me just answer that question. I've just looked it up, and I understand that some about 25,000 students are in the school district there in Richmond, Virginia.
That in Richmond, Virginia, the ADA per child is probably – $14,000.
I don't want to say it.
Well,
and that means that they got about
$350 million
in revenue, plus this added money.
Okay.
Well, they are saying that the $65 million of the $123 million federal stimulus package is an ambitious and aggressive literacy plan, and it does state that the money can be used until 2024, but it cannot be used for raises or bonuses. So that has been that has been put out there. But of the $123 million federal stimulus tax that they got, they're spending $65 million. It's going toward literacy coaches, reading coaches, and all that kind of craziness.
So, again, it begs the question, what is the methodology, what is the pedagogical structure of these reading programs and the literacy that you're talking about? Are these the same people recycled from the last 20, 30 years already? Will these be brand new people? Is there a new structure?
No.
New approach? I mean, and this is what I think, I'm listening to what St. Louis is saying. When parents are aware, when the first thing they hear about money coming, they should be at the table, and these are the questions they should be asking. What is the difference? And whoever is presenting this approach, and that's going to get paid from this money, what's different about what we've done from all the other money? You understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying we don't need it, and I'm not saying children, whatever it needs to educate children, do that. But what we don't need is this lack of accountability when taxpayer dollars are always spent and little accountability is resulted from it. That's all I'm saying. I'm sorry, somebody was going to say
Parents should be dictating every step of the way on that. Let's put it like it should happen, and they, in many cases, they have the power to do so. Now, I can quote Missouri and maybe one or two other states, but I can't go all over the country. But in Missouri, the law says that the curriculum, the textbooks, and the instructional material cannot be mandated by the state board of education nor the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, which is a state agency, but it shall be by the district, which means it's the people responsibility.
And how many people on your school board there in St. Louis? Do you know how many members
on the school board? That I'm not sure of, but I do know one of the representatives, and because, you know, it's all about politics. She got voted in. She's African American, but man, when they got through with their profile and everything, a lot of the black people now are against her, and so it's not looking good for her. I don't know if she's going to get reelected or not, but.
Well, now, what do you do, though? I mean, I can't speak to it because I don't know all the details, but, you know, if she's not voicing the concerns of the parents, and I think you said it was 80-something African-American, why wouldn't they be behind her unless she's saying something that's not in their best interest? You understand? I don't know, and I'm not – let me be very clear that I don't know all the details, so I'm not trying to say anything up or down, but from what – from the context of our conversation, these are logical questions that people ask. And what we don't want is games to be played and another year go around after money's been spent and our children don't get the education they need. Because they definitely need the reading support. They definitely need the literacy. The families need it, you know? And what we don't need is a bunch of political games from, if I don't care if you're orange or future or Fuchsia, purple, whatever you are. We don't need nobody playing games with our kids.
Well,
is that right, 8112? 8112 is joining us from out of Peoria, Illinois.
I'm sorry, you
welcome,
said what, sir? How you doing?
I was welcoming you to the conversation.
Thank you.
All right. Let me go back to St. Louis right quickly, and then we'll
this
go
is
there.
A scenario. If your child brings home a report card from the school, the parents should have that child assessed and evaluated and see if what the report card reports is the actual capabilities of the child. If it's not, then the parents should demand from the school board that they pay for tutoring, private tutoring, like a Sliven or whatever, in order to bring their child up where they should be. So it's best when the parents get the money and they seek out the proper institutions in order to bring their child up to where they should be. You don't want to go back to the public school. That's where the problem originated at.
Okay. Well, and so the hotbed issue is that there are some people would argue that, listen, we don't. Teachers need. We got to make sure we protect that cash cow of the teacher. And I'm speaking as a former educator. And I think most teachers are, those I knew anyway, their hearts were there in educating. But unfortunately, that's the reality out there. That again, as my sister said from the beginning, people are becoming rich off of a continued problem. And
well, let's look at what you just said. What you're talking about is dysfunction. If you got a dysfunction community, well, that's going to equate to a dysfunctional school district. Let me give you an example. There's a school district in St. George County, right outside of St. Louis, a little ways.
Okay.
It's a white district.
Okay.
They had a discrepancy in the money and what was going on. Some bills, things didn't add up. Those parents got rid of the entire school board, then got rid of the superintendent.
Okay.
That's the difference. The difference. In Normandy School District, which is 99% black, they hired a superintendent that wasn't even certified to be a superintendent. So that's the difference.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, hey, listen, guys. Tonight we're going to be cutting off at 8:30 tonight. I've been away too long on vacation, and I got to catch up with some numbers. But we'll be back for Florida Thursday night for our 2-hour episode. But yeah, that's so. Your point is well taken, St. Louis. That is really the power lies within the parent / voter.
Well, it also tells you the reality of what the heck's going on. That same school district had a half a day off or something of that nature to celebrate George Floyd, whereas in the high school, less than 5% of the student body in the high school is doing math proficient. That is silly.
Well, okay. You know what? There are a lot of issues here. And I think what we're coming back to is the fact that really those that are serious about resolving these problems, these academic issues, really need to take all that into account. What are we doing with the time that our children are spending in these formal instructional settings? How are we holding individuals to account for the money that are coming in their name, and who the devil is standing in front of them teaching them what?
And I say another thing too. My grandson went to a high school. We played baseball at that high school. If he didn't maintain a certain grade, he couldn't play on the team. In these other black schools, like the one I just got to mention, where you got less than 5% of the student body in the high school is doing math proficiency, none of those students should be playing sports. None of them.
Interesting. Now that makes for a good conversation, St. Louis. Because that's the saving grace for many of us. If it wasn't for that, then there was a brother by the name of Coach Carter. There was a movie made out of him. It's a real story out of California, Richmond, California. And that was his thing. He told him, listen, we need to focus on academic growth and development for these children, not, you know, the sports about it. But that makes for an interesting conversation. I think that makes for an interesting conversation. I've got about 12 minutes. 12, would you like to say anything before we, in this conversation, before we wrap it up?
No, thank you.
Okay, thanks for joining us tonight. And like I said, we'll be on 2 hours, and we'll have a focus topic on this coming Thursday night. Mr. Sheldon, we appreciate him again for sitting in for us last week. Done a great job.
Yes,
Pastor Wallace, we lost him as well. Well, so, in Ms. Virginia, in wrapping up the conversation, you pointed out quite well that it's not just white people that are profiting off of the economic, social, and political demise of black folks, but it's some of us. I'm saying us. I'm including those my people now. Those my people now. Y'all leave me alone. Those my folks.
That lady is right. It ain't some of y'all. It's all of it. Ain't no whites involved in that stuff.
Teach for America broke the contract.
Teach for America broke the contract with some of those urban schools. They said we're not going there. So who did that leave? You leave black folks.
Well. Now, okay, St. Louis, you're stepping on my toes, man. I need those up. I just bought
those. You need to have your toes stuffed on if you can't realize what the heck's going on and be honest about it. This has been going on forever.
Okay,
this
so
ain't
now,
nothing
St.
that
Louis,
started last week, last month. This has been going on forever, as long as I've known it. My children would not go to one of those schools.
I get you. Here's my challenge to you, sir. And this is a challenge to me as well. You and I agree on those points. But here's our challenge, though, now. We got to come hard and come clean with the solution, with the resolution. And you pointed out to where it needs to be. How is it that those families can go in there and say, listen, you got 200, I think you said that was about 14, the per pupil spending about 14,000 or so out of the 25,000 children.
And you know the funny thing about it? In those black school districts, the children have more money than their white counterparts have in their school district.
Across the state.
They got brand new buildings.
Yeah.
So all that stuff that people was using for excuses just don't is fallacy.
So here's the thing, and your point is well taken, and that is the answer lies within the empowerment of parents. First, by becoming aware of what we're talking about, right? And most importantly, becoming aware of the fact that if it were not for your child being in that school, assigned to it, those monies could not be appropriated or allocated for them. So you ought to have some say. Now, how do we get
now? Now, what you just said is ideal, but the thing is that seemingly not all, but a great majority of just don't care. You know, during busing, black kids was bused way out in the Parkway School District. And Parkway School District board realized that black parents have a difficult time and wouldn't be able to come to the board meeting. So what they said, they would bring a board meeting to the hood, which they did.
Right.
Guess who attended? Nobody.
Okay.
Now, if the parents don't care, seemingly, and we're basing this on their participation and the things that they should be doing, but it's not going on, then where did that leave the children? I feel sorry for these black kids. I really do.
But
I cannot love your child more than you do.
Gotcha. So St. Louis.
Well, you know what St. Louis is saying, and I'll end with this. I watched a video clip. And I've seen several of them, of rappers coming to inner city schools, giving away tennis shoes. Anyway, so this particular rapper came to the school. It was a low-income school, nothing but black children. Children were going crazy. They were passing out tennis shoes. Well, the guy that he originally came there for was not at the school, so they went to his home. Are you ready for this?
I'm listening.
Through sponsorship, they gave him a pair of tennis shoes that cost $50,000. If I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, I just never would have believed it.
Okay.
They gave
him a
pair of tennis shoes for $50,000. And the little boy, he was a little dwarf little boy. A lot of people were picking on him. He was so happy. And I'm looking at his surroundings, and I'm thinking, a $50,000 pair of tennis shoes? But that's the value system now. That is more important than anything for a lot of the kids in school is what they have on their feet.
What are they trying to do, get that kid killed?
Well, okay.
You ain't going to go outside with no $50,000 pair of tennis shoes on. You're going to get killed.
Hold on one second. I was going to say this, that in the last few minutes, I want to get a final word from you guys. What we see is four case studies, one in Peoria, Illinois, one in Nashville, one in St. Louis, and one in Richmond, Virginia. Okay? And what is a case study? That is an examination on the issues facing students there, whatever the dominant population is, and the resources available. That's what we can look at. We can ask ourselves, how can parents in all four of those areas, if they're not already, be empowered to take control of those circumstances so that their children win in the end academically? That's something. There you go.
Well, how can they use the powers that you have? There's nobody stopping them. Ain't no white man stopping them from doing that. Whites have left those areas. They fled from those areas. And now you got a small segment of black society is also fleeing those areas and running out to catch up with the whites. That's exactly what's happening.
All right. Well, all right. Sounds good. I hear what you're saying. Let me, St. Louis, let me hear from 8112 as we wrap up, and then 0946. Great conversation. I can't say you're wrong, St. Louis. I can't say you're wrong, even if I wanted to. Well, what do you think? Final thoughts. Turn us off, Will. Can you hear me? She may have muted her phone there. Go ahead, Virginia. Final thought. Give me a final thought, Will.
I think, you know, to the powers that be, to the representatives that go to the communities and get the constituents to vote for them, there doesn't seem to be, and I don't know, it just seems this way, there doesn't seem to be some type of plan or the will to empower the constituents to make for decisions to happen that's best for them. They get on these jobs, and then the kickbacks come because then the favors come in and whatever and all that good stuff. But it's kind of like, how do the constituents stay this ignorant? I don't know. I'm not understanding that, because these are the same constituents that came out and voted for them that are counting on their leaders to keep them informed of what's going on, and then all of a sudden it looks like the ball is dropped. So I'm not really sure what's going on with that dynamic.
Well, one indicator is the fact that when you see the voting turnout, and that's one indicator, is the voting turnout. When people don't come out and vote, what you do is you give a vote to the same foolishness that you've been dealing with. That's two ways you can vote. You can go in that thing and pull a lever, or you can stay at home and don't do nothing, and you empower the same folks to keep getting away with murder, basically. But, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I got you. Wow. Y'all sure have made it rough on me, Thursday, because we have to come with something that's real now. Because I'm saying that we need answers.
I don't think you're going to come with anything real. Black folks complain about racism. They complain about white supremacy. They complain about bigotry and white folks. Then they turn around and 88% vote for Joe Biden, who is all those plus.
Give me a shot, St. Louis. Give me a shot at it.
You know what your shot should be? You need to go home and sit down on the TV and watch TV. Because every direction you turn, you ain't got no hope.
Yeah, well, I just don't subscribe to that idiom, though, St. Louis. But I hear what you're saying. We're going to give it a shot, man. We're going to lay some things out there for your ear now. And we're going to talk straight about it. What you do with it is on you, though. See, that's my job, is to put it out there. I serve the food. You got to eat it. Whoever hungry, they got to eat now. But I'm going to give you something to eat. I'm going to drop something heavy on you so you can eat. Need some beans on your belly. Huh? With something to hold you for a little while. But it's up to you to eat, though. It's up to you to eat. Listen, guys, we appreciate you all. Great conversation. And we're gonna end it right there. And we'll be back Thursday. We'll be back Thursday for another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful for our sister out of Virginia, brother out of St. Louis, and sister out of Peoria, Illinois, and Pastor Waller. We missed him. But we'll be back Thursday. We'll be back Thursday for another episode of Talk Straight. Join us then. Langston Hughes talked about a mama's message to her son. We end on that.
Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor bare. But all the time I's been a-climbing on and reaching ladders and turning corners, sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light.